Welcome to another episode of Fertillo on Air. I'm Mike Stockton, coming to you from a sunny and warm London, England.
And one would think that we're at the same location, because it is sunny and warm here, but I'm still Balázs Ferenczi, coming to you from Karlsruhe, Germany.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice weekend, huh?
Summer, almost. Nah, it's summer, or early summer.
Yeah, well.
20 plus, 23, 4, 5. Today was really warm here.
So the day that this comes out, Tuesday, it will not be sunny and warm here.
It will. Let me check, because tomorrow is going to be a bit rainy, 23 Celsius. Tuesday, 25, and then a bit cold. Yeah, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it's going to be colder. But I think it's finally, just say spring weather, maybe not summer.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. I guess with that, we should finish our weather talk, because we've already been scolded about talking too much about the weather. Having said that, we're recording this on a Sunday. Next week, Sunday, I'm flying out to see you, amongst other things and other people.
Oh, yes.
So, we have to maybe record one again. In the hotel.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We can do that. live like we did the last time. But yeah, that's in a week.
Yeah, time for a pint on the 21st. So that will be a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and let's see what else. I was trying to think if there are any other. I feel like there haven't been a ton of. Well, I'll bring this up, yeah. It is watch-related, so I really have a preamble today unless you had any topics. Actually, do you have any other topics?
Not really, because we recorded the previous episode a few days ago, and not much really happened to me. I was sick on sick leave Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And that's it. Today I went to a soccer game. Saw some nice watches and some not so nice ones, but it was kind of work, not just pleasure. It was a nice thing. But that's it. And I don't really have much to say.
Nice. Well, what I was going to bring up to you is, and I'm looking forward to this. I know you're bringing a fixed spring bar strap.
Yeah.
For me, and
yeah,
I've purchased another watch, two watches actually, in the last few weeks, tank style watches that have fixed spring bars, and I find them annoying, Balázs.
You find them annoying?
The
spring bars, you mean?
Yeah, the fact that I really don't, you know, other than a NATO, one of these is like 16 odd millimeters, so I don't have any NATOs that size. But yeah, I find it annoying. And what I notice, one of the watches is gold, one of them is steel. But one of the, I notice with early watches, like nearly 100 years old, the gold watches tend to be fixed versus normal spring bars. And I don't know if that was like a stability thing or a strength thing. Not so sure.
Yeah, I guess maybe gold is softer, so they wanted to stabilize the lugs and the whole case, basically. I'm not sure, to be honest. What I have two, the 210 caliber, 210 Angelus chronographs that I think I wrote in a collector's guide about maybe last year or year before. Those are the only ones I think that I have that have fixed spring bars. But what I had from the 40s is a few of those chronographs where the ones that need female spring bars where, you know,
it's got those little pegs sticking out. Yeah.
Right, right, exactly. And those are annoying because they tend to break off. And then you either take it to watchmaker to weld it back, or you have to basically cut the other one off as well, and the watchmaker needs to drill the hole. In any case, it's not fun. And I have two or three of those same brand from the Second World War. And those are, I guess maybe it was fixed, and then it was these female spring bars, and then the regular. I don't know. We should have read the article. I think it was a few years ago about the history of spring bar by
Forster.
Jack Forster. Yeah, exactly. But then I don't care about his article, so I didn't.
I don't think I own a watch with these female spring bars. I was looking at one the other day. I think it was like an old Universal, and thought, oh, what a pain in the ass that would be to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not fun.
No, I've had some real surgeries lately trying to get spring bars out of watches. you know, you sometimes buy these watches and they come with the shoulderless spring bars or.
Yeah. They're awful, huh?
Or I had one the other day where it came on a really, really old strap, and not that I was going to use that strap, but I couldn't get the spring bars out, and it turned out that they actually had very little quick release type knobs on them, kind of like you would find within a strap, you know, like one of these quick release straps, but they were truly old spring bars. So I was kind of fascinated to see these things, but at the end of the day, I kind of pulled on the strap a little bit and I ripped it right off the spring bar. It was so rotten, you know, it was like dry rotted. So,
yeah,
you know, I solved my issue that way, but it was, I couldn't get it off. I mean, I've heard these discussions around threading dental floss in there and stuff like that. I tried some different techniques. I couldn't get it to move. So
if you don't care for the strap, just clip.
In
the middle, and that's it. The whole thing. Yeah,
I take some pliers or needle noses, and I just clamp down on the spring bar, and it suspends it. Right,
exactly. Yeah. Just clip it, and then it collapses, and then that's that.
Yeah,
and you can remove it, and then I mean, in any case, when I buy a watch, a vintage watch, I always remove the spring bars. Unless it's been serviced and I know it's, you know, it's kosher, I would just remove it and put my own spring bars there with my own strap. So I'm
speaking of old stuff and removing and being concerned about weird wrist funk. I unearthed the ultrasonic cleaner you gave me in Germany I saw you before I moved, and I don't think I'd ever used it before, but I remembered where it was up in the attic, and I found it pretty quickly. And I threw, I guess it's like a 1950s Montal British bracelet in there. And then my wife wears a Zin 556 every day. And the other night I looked at it and I thought, whoa, that needs a cleanup. So I took the bracelet off that thing and threw it in, and, I'd say it was just in the nick of time. So, but no, it worked pretty well. It's for those of you who've never used an ultrasonic, I always used a toothbrush and soap before, but really getting inside those little links and everything, the ultrasonic does a nice job. I use a little bit of dish soap, Balash, and that seemed to do a pretty nice job.
Yeah. That's the thing. I usually do the same, just like a drop of soap, some lukewarm water.
How many minutes do you let it run for?
I let it run like the full, I think is, what is this?
10 minutes, I think.
Something like 300 seconds or something. I don't know. And then I let it run sometimes 2-3 circles because
they're
not as good as like professional ones, right? If you put it in these professional watchmakers, it's like it shakes the living, everything out of the bracelet. These are not that good, obviously.
Yeah. No, but it did a nice job. I mean, the water was suitably dirty afterwards, and you know, I just ran it under the sink and dried it off, and it's pretty handy.
Yeah, so. I think it's every once in a while you should rinse or clean every bracelet. If you take it off, or if you put it on a strap or whatever, change the a link or whatever. Just take it off, put it in there, wash it. It's a nice, like a gloomy Sunday afternoon program. If you have nothing to do, if it's raining outside, take your bracelets off, wash them, especially if they haven't been washed in a long time or ever.
Yeah. It's amazing. Just, amazing how much funk comes out of these.
Oh, things. Yeah. You don't even think. And those things, you can pick them up on Amazon for these ultrasonic cleaners, $15, $20, $30, pounds, whatever. I mean, yeah. They're everywhere these days, and they can also clean your phone case. You can also clean your sunglasses, your glasses, or whatever. I wouldn't put a watch
pinky ring in there.
There you go. Yeah, I put both my signet rings.
Yeah, exactly. I bought one of those in London here, because.
Hey, you need to get one. The double-breasted suit.
Yeah. I do have one watch, a non-watch related topic, although it is kind of watch related because I use my computer heavily to write articles. I ordered a mechanical keyboard and it will arrive tomorrow. Now,
okay. You went down the rabbit hole?
I did. And I still remember, I know this is a few years ago, Blake Bettner, formerly of Hodinkee, formerly of Worn and Wound, and I guess now on his own.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about these mechanical keyboards on a podcast episode, and I thought, what the hell is this guy talking about? He's talking about soldering keys and all this kind of thing. Well, I honestly wasn't into it, Balazs, but recently I've noticed I really dislike typing on the Mac. And I use a Magic, one of the wireless keyboards they sell. And I just find it's not a great keyboard. So I always enjoyed the old IBM keyboards. You're too young for that, but maybe you had them in school.
Oh, no, I remember those. Yeah.
And you could pull the caps off and.
Yeah. And it was gunky and dirty and hair and food and everything. And you had to take the caps off, vacuum the whole thing, put them back on. Of course.
But somehow these keyboards,
after 4 years, they were yellow, lemon yellow.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They they look like they'd been in a nicotine filled pub for, but they worked really well. And they gave kind of a nice typing experience. So I did some light research. We're talking less than an hour because man, you want to talk about a rabbit hole. Mechanical
keyboards.
Ridiculous, dude. Ridiculous.
I know. I work for an IT company.
Yeah.
Some of those guys are the whole day. It feels like you're back in the 1970s in finance institution. Everybody's typing all the time.
Typing away, right?
Accounting firm. Yeah, and it's there's lights and all kinds of different luminescent materials and LEDs. And this part is green and yellow and purple. And you could change the springs and the this and the that. And I'm like, no. I don't even want to get into that.
Yeah, so there's apparently three primary types of switches. There's linear, there's tactile, and there's clicky. And the tactile ones give that feedback but don't make noise, and then the linear ones, don't have that feedback. So I like the really clicky one, and I'm not going to be in an office. So I found this one called a Keychron K2, which apparently was a Kickstarter darling a couple years ago, and then somebody here in the UK had one on eBay, new in box. He must have tried it once, literally, and realized it was too loud and it was too expensive to send back. So I made an offer on it and got it for about half price. So we'll see. It's like £50. So we'll see how that is.
£50 is half price?
Yeah.
It's like £100. Oh,
okay. Yeah. So, but you can spend hundreds on these things. So it's, again, it's a rabbit hole. So I'll be interested to see how that is. I'm kind of excited to get it, which is weird.
Yeah, I, as I said, I know some people that use it and then have it. I don't know. I've never used one. I never tried one. To be honest, I don't really use the keyboard that much. I mean, when I write, but I don't write,
that often.
8-9 hours a day, yeah. and I have this magic keyboard as well with the magic mouse at home and at the office. So I'm okay with it. I like the fact that it's flat. What I hated about those keyboards is that they were so high, like you had to, I felt like I had to, you know, keep my hands in like a certain kind of angle that was not comfortable. Yeah. So that's why I like these flat keyboards. But I guess
they make wrist rests for these things. That's a whole other rabbit hole. Incredible.
So I have an uncle by marriage who studied computer science in the 80s in Russia, believe it or not.
Nice.
And well, now he lives in London for like 20 years now. And he has an IT company. I remember he was the first guy I saw back in the 90s who had those keyboards, which was like split in the middle. Mm. And he had like, you know, one part was under his left hand and the other one was under his right. And I think it was even moving. I was connected to the chair. So he could move. He could turn with a chair and the keyboard had like two parts and he could type that. That was crazy.
You probably don't remember those chairs that they had that were basically like two beams. The beam you'd put your knees on, and then you'd sat on a.
Oh yeah. I do. Yeah. I do. Because it's supposed to be these
ergonomic.
Yeah. It's like what fitness ball is now.
Yeah.
And now you have those fitness balls.
So I still remember going to the computer store. This must have been 82, 83 with my parents and. We bought an Apple II Plus, which I wish we still owned. And yeah, they're worth money now. Expensive, which is insane. And a bunch of cards, like Microsoft cards that here again would be worth big money, I'm sure. I still remember them years later sitting in the laundry room under the cabinet, and my dad finally got rid of them. But yeah, they had those chairs in there, and I can still remember the font from this store. It was like this. I can't remember the name of the font. You'd recognize it if you saw it, but it was very 80s futuristic looking, from that kind of like from that movie War Games, if you ever saw that with Matthew Broderick. But I still remember walking in and it felt so futuristic in there.
Not those days are over.
Yeah. So anyhow, So that's where we are. So today, and here we are, 17 minutes in. We
put it in the article. People love that stuff.
Yeah, they do love it. So we're going to talk today, and I think Richard gave us this this suggestion a couple episodes back in the comments. He's a very faithful listener and commenter, so we thank him for this idea. Mm-hmm. But He came up with a good show idea here, some watches that have come out in the last few years that maybe people missed, or I think in the case of the ones that I'll name at least, I think they were discussed perhaps, but then quickly forgotten, and perhaps they shouldn't have been. So we're going to go through some of those, and before that, we mm-hmm. will do what we normally do and kick it off with a Hengelenx controller. Right. So you want to lead us off, Balazs?
Well, I'm definitely can. As I said, we're recording this on a Sunday. So if anybody who's listening this follows me or you, actually, they saw what I was wearing today. As I said, I was at a soccer game and
the Jacob and Co. billionaire.
That's the one. Pink diamonds, baby. No, I was wearing a blue shirt, and I thought, why shouldn't I wear something blue to match the shirt? I had my Grand Seiko on. I still have it on a blue leather strap. So I picked up the Grand Seiko. So I was wearing it today until I came home.
What's the reference number for everybody's?
It's the, wait a second. What's the, SBG, is it SBG 8, 4, oh, I always, because there's two, right? There's the one that's a tad more expensive. The fourth SBGA 439 is mine, which is the less expensive version. And then it's the SBGA 375, I think, is the more expensive version.
But it's the like a only difference is a more textured dial, right?
Yes, and this one has a three-link bracelet, and that one has like a five-link bracelet. Or like three links, but, you know, with the two little decorative polished parts.
Omega-like bracelet, let's call
it. Kind of, right? Yes. And this one is like the three-link bracelet. So this one, and here I think the spring drive text and the power reserve is printed on the dial, and on the SBGA 375, it's like etched in the dial. So that's a difference. So, and I had it on the bracelet. Obviously, I bought it on the bracelet, but a few weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago, I took the bracelet off. I think I mentioned that one time. I put it on the strap.
You took it off for the Met Gala, right?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's the one. I wore it with my wet t-shirt.
You've been wearing that watch a lot, actually.
Yeah, I like it. I like it on the I like it on the strap, I have to say. And, you know, it's really comfortable. I like that the strap is thin and kind of tapering. So the focus is really on the watch. And this is one of those watches where you put it on, you take the bracelet off and you put it on a strap, and it's a completely different look. Really absolutely different, in my opinion. So, and I think I was wearing it the other day as well in the city, and it was just around, and I said, you know, why not wear the same thing for them? And of course, it was, I was up in the, I don't want to brag, but I was up in the executive blah, blah, lounge, whatever it is, skybox, and as a Rolex galore everywhere. And Breitling, a lot of Breitlings, surprisingly. But I saw some Kermits and an older lady, which was a bit out of place. She was wearing a big green Kermit, couple of subs, couple of Daytonas, as I said, some Breitlings, tackier Breitlings and older ones, and not nice. Too many Omegas, but yeah, a lot of Rolexes.
Very nice. Very nice.
And the matching parking lot, can you imagine?
Absolutely. A lot of AMG.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, a couple of G-Wagons, a couple of Porsches, a couple of Ferraris, stuff like that. Yeah.
Not bad.
The usual stuff.
Well, speaking of Rolex, I am wearing my yellow gold Datejust 1625, which is a Turnograph.
Pimp watch.
Yeah. Turnograph or a Thunderbird. This one is from 1966. And I have it on the, I guess you'd call it like a baby blue or light blue gray suede from GLC straps. And yeah, absolutely wakes up the watch. It I did one of those strap check articles on this watch, and this came, funnily enough, on a GLC strap. It was bought at the Munich Watch Fair probably like 6-7 years ago. And it came on a, looked like an ostrich strap, but dark brown. And it looked cool, but boy, dark brown with this watch, it's got a, I guess you'd call it like a light silvery champagne colored dial. It just was a sleepy looking watch. It really had no character with that brown strap. And I think I'd talk to you a little bit about some brighter colors, and it's really nice for spring here. This light blue really transforms the watch. So
yeah, I think people often make that mistake that they pair gold watches with brown straps, and I think that's the worst combination you could do. The second worst is black.
Yeah.
I think when you have a nice gold watch, just be a bit more creative with the colors, right? And get something nice instead of just like brown or black.
Yeah.
I like gold with green. I think that's really nice. I like it with blue. If it's a it's a right shade of blue, I think that's also, that's what I told you as well. So yeah, there's a bunch of options. There's better options than black or brown, is all I'm saying.
So very, very great watch for the weather today, the sun, everything. So yeah, I hadn't worn this watch in a very, very long time. So,
And it's a great watch too. So
yeah, it's cool. Thanks.
On the blue strap specifically, yeah.
Yeah. So now we'll get into our main topic. Mm-hmm. And since I just spoke, why don't you lead us off? So again, we're talking about watches that were released over the last few years that were either forgotten or ignored or just basically came and went, and yeah, pieces that we think are worth bringing back up again.
And yeah, absolutely. And I think that what maybe as a side note is that just because we pick a watch, it doesn't mean that they're totally a secret, unknown, yeah, unheard of. So I'm sure there's going to be people saying, oh, but I heard about this watch. I know it was released. Yeah, I'm very happy for you, but I'm sure there are people who are not. And even if they are, to me, subjectively, it was like that. So,
yeah. And look,
looking forward to the comments.
Yeah. Short of like a Daytona or something, these days, I hate to say it, almost every watch comes and goes very quickly.
Yes. Specifically for us, right? Because that's what we do all day, every day. So yeah, I saw it, but then I saw 55,000 other watches in the past 24 months. So just because it is a memorable watch to you, it doesn't mean it's a memorable watch to me. And if it's not, I'm going to mention it. Tough luck.
So yeah.
That's all I'm saying. So my first one, believe it or not, is a Breitling. And it's the Breitling Premier B25 Datora.
Ooh.
And I like the watch because, of course, I think it came out 2021, right? With the B09s were the ones with the, you know, the pistachio green and those dials. I think.
Gosh, is that already 21?
21 or 22.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I'm not sure. A couple of years ago. But in any case, I think those are nice chronographs, but I'd really like the B25 because it is more than just a chronograph, right? It has a date, it has a triple date, it has a moon phase, it has a chronograph. So it's a very cool watch. It has a lot of features. Whew. It's a modern piece.
2021, by the way. Sorry.
2021. Yeah. So I was right. Yeah. 3 years ago. There you go. Time flies. It has this light brownish, some people call it salmon dial. I don't necessarily think it was salmon. I think it was more like, help me out, Mike. Like, do you think it was salmon? It wasn't really, was it?
I don't think so. I think it's more like a
yellow.
Yeah, aged creamy color, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. And
copper, by the way.
Copper, yeah, okay, copper. So when and it came on a brown strap, which is awful. just talked about it. Anyways, I think when they came out, they were everywhere. Specifically the chronographs, mm-hmm, because of their funky colors. But since then, and of course, Breitling focused on other stuff, and they released a bunch of other stuff. I haven't really heard a lot about these or seen a lot about, a lot of these models in the wild anymore. So I thought, you know, they're interesting. And when it comes to the beat, I think it's 09, as I said, or the 25, my money is on the 25. Now I checked when it came out originally, it was $13,000, about 12,000 euros. Now on a secondary market, you can pick it up, pick one up for around 8,000.
Not bad.
So I think So I think it's also a great deal. Of course, as I said, it's a ton of features: triple calendar, chronograph, moon phase. Now it's a 42, so it's not the largest watch. It's Speedmaster size, right? So it's a normal size. 100 meter water resistance, blah 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 blah. On a leather strap, this one comes on, and I like the look. I like that it's vintage inspired. I like the fact that it's new. The price is not cheap. Yes, I know, but it's also not too bad, specifically considering the retail price back then. And I think it's just an overall cool watch, and I think it's a bit of a forgotten piece.
It's a great choice.
Thank you.
100% agree. I wrote all these up because they came out with the 40 millimeter Premier. They came out with the Datura, and they came out with the Duograph all at the same time.
Yes.
And it was August of 2021, just a really classy set of releases. And it's funny, I thought about the pistachio piece because you don't hear about that one either, but that's a nice watch too.
If you like the color,
obviously.
Yeah, that bunch, as you just mentioned, they came together and they're all kind of came and went, right?
Yeah.
A bit forgotten, I would say.
Just don't hear about them. No, it's a great pick.
Yeah, that would be mine. And I'm wondering what's your first watch going to be?
So my pick is a watch that, quite openly, when I saw it, I did a double take. And this is a brand, funny enough, that we never talk about. We never talk about on Fratello. And Lex, who wrote up the watch, even mentions that. And the funny thing is, when I saw this watch, I shot a note to Nacho and I said, hey, I don't know if we've got any info on this watch. I'd like to write it up. I said, it's a weird one. And he said, you know, funny enough, Lex saw this watch and he said the same thing. And he's like, he just got to it a little bit earlier. And the watch here is, get ready for this, the Raymond Weil Millésime, oof, brutal, automatic small seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know this watch?
I saw his article, and then I was like, why are we even mentioning this brand? Not because there's anything wrong with the brand, or maybe there is, I don't know. Just as you said, we just never really, not even articles, we never even discussed this brand privately, you know, and we had a lot of dinners together and lunches and breakfasts and stuff. It's just the brand just never got mentioned.
No, and right, wrong, or different, I batch Raymond Weil, Baume & Mercier, Maurice Lacroix, these types of brands together, and I really have no idea what they're doing. They don't hit my radar. And again, that doesn't mean that there's something wrong with them, but
mm-hmm.
this watch somehow came across my, whether it was Instagram or somewhere. And I thought, holy cow. I said, Raymond Weil's actually making a pretty nice looking, I'd say kind of 40s looking sector dial type watch without a lot of crap all over the dial. And they, of course, put automatic in the sub-seconds area, but all in all, it's a pretty clean-looking watch. And here again on the secondary market, about $1,800. It uses a Salita-based movement, so it is the Salita 261-1 base automatic, and so nothing overly fancy under the hood, but good looking watch, 39.5 millimeters by 46.3, 10.25 thickness. I would say it's a nice alternative to like a Longines Heritage type piece.
Yeah.
So I think it's if one is an and by the way, if you think about the LU Chopard pieces that have come out in the last, well, Watches and Wonders and then last year, they've been of this style with these sector dials.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
Anyhow, just a watch that, and they have like a light silver and a dark gray version. So I like it. I like it. Would I run out and buy one? No, but if I were in the market for something like this, it's interesting. I think it's a nice looking watch.
It is. The one thing that's not interesting is its price, because I think it's a bit pricey at 2,050 euros. Because you can get a a similarly exciting Baltic for 650 euros. I mean, that's not sector. I know the Baltic is Breguet numerals and, you know, but it's not a bad looking watch. And I think it's just a bit pricey for what it is.
I think it depends, right? If you're the kind of buyer who likes having a high street AD near you, there's probably a Raymond Weil seller nearby, right? So you can actually go and try it on and that type of thing. So
no, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. And as you said, I like the fact that the lugs are short, which optically obviously basically makes the watch look bigger, or the watch case. And if you look at the press images, it also looks like it's a 44. I don't know why.
Yeah, it does look big.
The guy just has an extremely small wrist, the model. but it's a nice looking watch. There's absolutely nothing wrong with this. And I like the look. The only thing I don't like, as I said, is the price, because for 2000, there are so many better ones that you can pick up. But it's a decent model and it's actually a cool pick. And funny that you picked this, because my second watch is a Omega that is no longer available. I think this is also 2021 or 2022, and that's the Omega CK859, which I'm going to copy and paste the link in the chat here. But
that's a great pick.
And this is very similar in style to yours. So it is not really a sector dial, but kind of similar. I guess it is, or at least it was based on a sector dial watch. I think when it came out, I'm not sure what the price was, but I'm definitely sure that the price now is way better.
6,800 euros.
68. So let's say 7,000. And now you can pick one up for under five. US, Japan, the cheapest in Europe is, it's more like 6-ish, 5-8 in Italy. But I just think it's same or very similar in size as yours, as I said. It's 39 millimeters steel on a leather strap. It takes it to 20 millimeter leather strap. It comes in a beautiful wooden box. If you flip it over, you see the caliber 8926, which is a beautifully decorated hand-wound movement. It's not a limited edition, but it's a numbered edition. 72 hours of power reserve, as I said, manual wind, and only 66 grams, which I think it's extremely light for what it is, for the size of 39 millimeters and 11.7 thickness and 46 lug to lug.
Yeah. Well, I remember this watch, Balazs. And I remember going into the Frankfurt Omega boutique.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in there specifically to go see this watch. And the guy said, we had one. It was our last one. And I think it left, he said, the building an hour before. And he said, we're not getting any more in. So this watch was really a funny thing. It came and went, truly. I don't know how long that they were on sale for, but it wasn't very long, was it?
I mean, as I said, I think it's 21 or 22, and it's already out of production.
Yeah, 22.
It 22, was, 2 years old.
I think Gerard did the review, and I talked to him about it, and I think he even struggled. I don't think he got one in the end, but I think he had a similar situation where he couldn't get one. He did say the lugs were a little bit long, if I'm not mistaken, which is strange because 46.2 is definitely reasonable.
Yeah, it doesn't look like long, yeah.
No, but that's a great pick. I think this is probably one of the best Omega releases in the last few years, and it's hilarious, right? Because they obviously aren't shy on PR when they come out with a new watch.
Yeah.
And they haven't been for some time. So 2022, when this came out, certainly would have been in the realm of Instagram and all kinds of other things that they would have done. And this was really a very quiet release.
Yeah, maybe it was too vintage inspired, because it obviously is a vintage inspired watch. Yeah. I'm not sure. I like it. Obviously, I like the, I mean, this is all wheels, like yours and mine. This sub 40 manual wind, time only, sub second, blued steel hands kind of watch. And I think it's under 5K if, okay, from Japan or in the US, but even in Europe, it's under 6K. It's tremendous amount of watch for the money. Just before we move on to your second pick, just one thing I want to mention about the caliber, the 8926. As I said, it's a hand-wound caliber, 30 jewels, 72 hours of power reserve, 25,200 frequency, coaxial, chronometer certified. It's, I don't know if it gets any better than that for a manual wind, time-only movement than that. And it's beautiful, by the way.
I think the only complaint I could make, and it's not really a complaint, would I like it a little thinner? Sure.
But, yeah. Yeah.
True. But it's also a watch that looks like it wouldn't be just a dress watch. It could actually take daily wear without a problem.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, you're right. It's a perfect watch, perfect dress watch, right? If you want, even if you were wearing a polo shirt or a t-shirt with jeans, this is with the right strap. This is a beautiful watch. I really like it, and I think it's, yeah. We really have not talked too much about that. So, and I think it has a silver dial because it has the AG 925 on the dial.
Yes, you're correct, and. Yeah. Were you aware that they did a Sedna Gold version of this for Beijing 2022?
Oh, no. Ah, yes, yes. I remember. Ah, yeah, true. I remember that. Yes, yes.
Still available, by the way.
But not for 5,000.
18,100 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So
20 plus thousand euros.
A little bit more expensive, but also a nice looking watch.
Yeah, yeah. It's very similar to your Raymond Weil, so.
Yeah,
twice the price, and then
take the Omega.
Yeah, so. Yeah, no, me too. But
sure,
but interesting how we picked kind of a similar model.
Anyways. Yeah. So my next watch is definitely going to fall under the category of, hey, I know about this watch. This isn't a secret. Why are you talking about this watch? Well, it's more to me of an example of a watch getting covered up by other releases and. Other releases since this came out a couple years ago. And this would be the updated Tudor Black Bay. And I specifically chose the 36 millimeter model with the blue dial, mm-hmm. which these came out and were,
it was also my list, but I scratched it off, but it was also my list.
So these replace the ETA powered models with in-house chronometer movements, the MT5400. And it's interesting, the 36 mil watch now sells or retails for, let's see, £3,360. I've on the 4.7. Jubilee style.
Yeah. 4.7 euros, yeah. The Jubilee bracelet, 4.7, yeah.
Are you sure that's that model, or is that the one with the diamond indexes?
So it's the Black Bay 36. No, you're right. It's the one with the diamond indexes, yeah. That's 4,750.
Yeah.
So this one is probably cheaper then.
Yeah. It's not easy to see on the site. But used... I saw these sitting somewhere just above $3,000. So I think when Tudor came out with these and they put on the upgraded Jubilee style bracelet with the folding clasp and brought in the
folding what?
Claps.
Yeah.
And well, it's not an in-house movement. I don't want to get chided for that. It's a Kinesi movement. But regardless, it's a really nice looking watch. I've seen these in person, and I think they're really good pieces.
They are. Absolutely.
Obviously, you've got your range of sizes. You can go larger than this too. But I'm obviously a fan of the 36 just from the Explorer point of view. And I think a dark blue dial is a nice option compared to black all the time.
Yeah, it's 3.9 for the regular one. So not with the diamonds. So 4,750 in euros. So 4,750 for the diamonds and 3,900 on the Jubilee style bracelet without the diamonds, just a regular blue 36 millimeter blue dial. The one thing I never understood about this watch visually, and I don't remember for the last time when I saw it, it's like, to me, the lugs are, or just, it just looks like the bracelet is a bit too wide for the case. I don't know how big. I'm guessing there's like 20 millimeter bracelets, and I'm guessing the bigger one has the same bracelet. I don't know. Could be. And that, to me, that looks a bit odd. Like, you can see like that the lugs are almost on the side of the case. That's the only thing I would, you know, if I wanted to like,
nitpick on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Nitpick. Then that's the only thing, but it's, yeah, it's a, again, under 4,000 brand new on a bracelet, from a very respected brand, because Tudor is a respected brand, right? It's the brother, little sister, whatever of Rolex. It's a great pick. I think Tudor just kind of, they made that mistake, quote unquote mistake, that they, just like many other brands, they started to release way too many watches, and the traffic kind of cannibalizes, you know.
Well, the
each other.
The sports watches get all the press, right? So
yeah,
it can be, heck, I don't know, another co-branded Pelagos or Black Bay chronograph or something like that came out with recently, the cycling one, and it overshadows something like this, which in my view, this is a much more wearable watch. And I think it's a, like we said, the price is reasonable. What you're getting is really good. Their bracelets are really good. So yeah, I think too many watches and too much focus on the flashy sports pieces, and this could one be, yeah. sort of got swept under. So
I checked the 36 has a 19 millimeter bracelet. That's a big FU to the strap industry. And the 39 millimeter version has a 21 millimeter bracelet.
So 19 and 21, you say?
Yeah. On the 36, you have a 19 millimeter bracelet. On the 39, you have a 21 millimeter bracelet. And on the 41, guess what? You have a 22 millimeter bracelet.
Well,
that's what they did.
That's interesting. And funnily enough, the Explorer also has a 19 millimeter bracelet right now.
Yeah. And then you can get the blue one, as you said. You can get like the kind of the brown or like bronze, dark bronzish dial. Then you get this bright silvery dial, then the blue with the diamonds. And then, of course, every other color with the diamonds. So there's plenty of options, but. This is a cool model line, actually. 31, 36, 39, 41. And the two tones, yeah, not so much, but the the blue ones, even this darker color, I don't know if you want to what you call it, as I said, bronze or black. I'm not sure what
kind of trying to do the gilt thing, I think, with these, right?
Yeah. Like gilt, anthracite, it's an writing. Anthracite, but anyways, it's a cool pick. I like these models. Okay, so I need my last one, right?
You do.
I told you before we started recording that I picked like 6 or 7 even, so we can do a second episode. The other one I picked is we talked about this. I remember when I came back from New York last October from Wind Up. And that is the Bulova or Bulova Mailships W2181.
Ooh.
And remember, I mentioned that I've seen it for the first time in real life. It's a it's a €600 watch. Again, on the secondary market, it's around 400, 450. It's from 2021 again or 2022. A very quirky looking watch with a large case, but a very thin strap. And it is a watch that I absolutely do not need, but I absolutely do want. And yeah, it's obviously I think I mentioned this in that episode that when I was at Windup, I met I'm not sure the gentleman's name, but Mr. Bulova or whatever he was referred to, like he's this older gentleman who really knows everything about the brand and vintage models and stuff. And he told me the story how they found these the plans and the blueprints, and it was never produced. It was just planned and designed and. Then Boulevard decided to actually produce the watch. And I think it's a cool story, whether it's true or not, I don't know. And really, to be honest, I don't care. I think it's just a cool looking piece. Obviously, it's a military, well, now it's a military inspired piece. But you know the watch, so what do you think?
Yeah, I was very heavily tempted when these came out. And oddly, they weren't in, were they? They were only in America for the first year or so, or maybe even 2 years. Couldn't really get them in Germany. And then they became available. I remember when they, sorry, going back again, when they came out with like a special limited version and some sort of a dive helmet type thing. Mm-hmm. And couple thousand bucks, I think, and it had a different movement, a more upgraded movement. But I really like them. It's not a small watch, so I don't know if it would fit me. I know the very thin, what is the strap width, 16 or 17 or something?
Yeah, I can't remember. I found it on Amazon and it says 22, but it's definitely not 22.
No.
The length is 22, not the width. No, I think it's like probably 15, 16, and I think the watch is like 41 or 42. So it just looks, looks a bit weird, but
16 again, millimeter strap.
16, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And the case is, as I said, it's 41.
Super cool watch. Super cool.
And affordable. So, you know, I think for $400 or $500, even if you buy it new on Amazon for $550, it's a good deal. If you want to buy it secondhand, $400, $450, you can get one.
Yeah, it's probably a watch that does come up quite a bit because perhaps some people just can't get on with that 16 millimeter width, or maybe it wears large on them. I don't know. But it's a super cool watch. It's a brand that it's not a micro brand. Nothing against micro brands, but clearly if you want a brand you've heard of, then most people know Bulova, and this watch does have a bit of history behind it. Mm-hmm. So it's a great pick, and you're right. This watch caused a real stir when it came out, and then it went just quiet.
Disappeared. Yeah.
Yeah.
Went really it's quiet. Swiss made, which is not every Bulova is Swiss made. This one is, even though it has a Miura inside.
Well, that's not a surprise because they're owned by them, right? So
Yeah.
There you go. So no, I think that's a really, really good pick. And you're right. Totally forgot about it.
So that's my last pick. What's yours?
Okay. Well, my last pick is also a dive watch. And this one is going to surprise you. Let's see if I get a little bit of flack for this because we talked about Tag Heuer last week. But the watch that I'm going to choose, and I'll preface this before and just tell you that when Tag Heuer came out with their new Aqua Racer line few years back, I thought, okay, this is a return at least to some good-looking watches from Tag Heuer on the sporty side. Mm-hmm. And I like what they came out with. The normal Aqua Racer debuted first at 300 meters. It's not a – I can't remember the diameter, but it was a bit large for me to consider. Not that I need another dive watch, but in any case, they then followed it up a year later with the 200 meter version, which is a more wearable for me, 40 millimeter size. But what I liked best that they came out with is the it is the Hoyer Tag Heuer Aquaracer Professional 200 Solar Graph in titanium.
Ooh, a lot of specs.
Yeah. So this is a 40 millimeter diver, 200 meters of water resistance. It is a grade 2, so not grade 5. Matte finish titanium watch with a oyster style bracelet, a dark gray slash black dial, and it's got this kind of aqua colored
carbon bezel.
Yeah, it's got
the one. Yeah,
it's got a titanium bezel as well.
Oh, it's not the one with the carbon Super Luminova bezel.
No, that was a special edition.
That's a special. Yeah.
I'll send you the link here just so you have it. And this watch, while it costs, I believe, about £2,700 new, I see them on Chrono 24 for $2,000.
So like 1.8 euros and even less in pounds.
Yeah. So I like this watch. I think there's a lot of love for solar powered watches just from not having to dig in there and change the battery perspective. They tend to go for a long time, even if you don't wear them 6 months sometimes without really picking one up. And here again, I think good looking watch, good brand, and titanium and I have a love hate relationship, but I think that this is pretty slick looking. It's a nice looking watch.
It is a very nice looking watch. I like the surface because it kind of like it almost looks sandblasted, mm-hmm. or it's definitely not polished or not brushed. Obviously, it's hard to polish, but it's not brushed. It has a bit of a rugged looking surface. Now, having said that, I think nobody ever in the history of mankind has ever used a Tag Heuer to dive. But or at least I think nobody.
I'm sure Jacques Cousteau did at some point, buddy.
Sure, yes. I mean, he dove at everything. But no, it's all jokes aside, I think it's a cool watch. It's a nice pick. Again, for new 3,100 on the website for a quartz Tag Heuer diver is a bit, you know, yeah, rich in my blood, but
exactly. There's a lot to choose from in that space, but boy,
yeah,
on Chrono 24 or wherever you go, yeah, that's a pretty good deal.
It's a good deal, and it's a good looking watch. It's really really a nice watch, and I actually, as I said, I quite like the case
finishing,
and
the
finishing. Yeah, it's quartz caliber TH50-00 Eco Drive.
So the weird thing is, I knew about the. I wonder, is that a citizen movement with Eco Drive? Might be.
Me, but then it shouldn't be Swiss made.
Well,
I guess
rules around that can be a bit.
Well, there you go.
But I guess. Here's a watch, and I covered...
It is a Citizen, by the way. It's a Citizen E168.
Yeah,
because
I wrote up the original version, the one you mentioned with the carbon fiber bezel,
mm-hmm.
and that was a limited edition. And then you had these regular edition watches come out, and I think they may make titanium and steel. I can't recall, but not much was ever said about them. And... I honestly didn't know that this watch existed. I didn't know.
And it's also chronometer certified movement, by the way.
Wow.
So it's a Citizen movement. It's a Swiss made watch, Citizen E168, quartz analog chronometer certified movement under the caliber, Tag Heuer caliber name TH50-00.
Yeah. I think it's a cool watch. I like it.
It is. Yeah, nice picks, huh? Quite versatile again. Different price ranges.
Very different brands.
Yeah, very different brands. Yeah,
yeah. I think this idea of watches that may have crept by people over the last few years, probably not going to be Rolex watches, but heck, you named an Omega. That second you mentioned it, I thought, oh yeah, of course, that was a fantastic release that got very little coverage because it was also released out of cycle. So it wasn't at any kind of major event or anything. And I even remember sending RJ a note. I was like, dude, what the heck is this watch? And he goes, yeah, they just sort of dropped it. And it took everyone by surprise. So I don't know if it was originally planned for something else and they just had it ready and just decided to do it, or whatever they had it planned for didn't happen. I don't know. But
yeah, well, I mean, all of these watches are available. Some of them still available new, some of them only secondhand.
And all of them at less than retail price.
All of them, yeah. Yeah.
Some significantly less.
Yes, yes. So in case of the Breitling, for example, as I said, from 12, it went down to 8. Omega, you said 6 or 7 was the retail price. Now it's not available, but secondhand market is like 5-ish, 5.5-ish. Dubulova, I think it's, you know, it's okay because it's maybe €100 cheaper if you buy it secondhand, but all of them are available and that's cool. So, and I have some more picks, so we can do an episode 2 if this one is well received and, you know, in the comments people want another episode. And
yeah,
I have some more ammo.
Certainly, if there are watches out there that people also think came and went very quietly, we'd love to hear your thoughts. So
yes,
there's a lot of them, honestly, a lot of watches. I still find it amazing how brands that you think you know well, you can go to their website and pour through their catalog and go, I totally forgot about that watch, or
yeah,
what is that watch, or oh, they came out with that dial variant, I had no idea. So
yeah. Yeah, that's true. And just to go back to last episode, I got a message from someone. I'm not going to say who, because, well, we usually don't say that. Tony. Let's just say Tony. And he said that he messaged me the other day, and he said, I kid you not a day before it dropped the last episode, I reached out to a guy about this Datejust, and he closed the deal on the 1603 after, and he listened to the podcast. And he sent me a few pictures, and it's a very, very good deal. It's a more than full set. So congrats, Tony, on your DJ. Oh,
very nice. Yeah.
I don't think I had anything to do with that. I'm very happy that, as a coincidence, we both had DJs in our minds when I recorded it and when you listened to that. So
congrats. By the way, have you made your decision? Or are you going to?
No, I haven't. I haven't because, yeah, I was sick, as I said, last week. So I was busy with trying to, you know, get better. And I'm sorry, every once in a while, there's a bit of coughing. It's still there. I went for a run yesterday. I tried to, see how it goes, and it went terribly. So I had to, after 4 kilometers, I needed to stop because I was just unable to run. So I'm still not 100%.
I'm maybe further along than you are, but I've also been muting myself here and coughing. So
there you go. So, hopefully by next week I'll be better. And tomorrow is Monday, and I'll be in Frankfurt visiting our friends at Swatch Group Germany.
Oh, nice.
So next week, hopefully I'll be able to give you guys a bit of an update on what's coming. You know, what have I seen? What is that I can talk about? What is I cannot talk about? So let's see what they have in store for me tomorrow.
Enjoy some of those German candies and snacks.
Yeah.
Things that I'd never heard of.
Yeah. Nice snack bar, huh? They have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then as I said, maybe we can record the next one live from London. Yes. From the hotel or wherever, or a bar. Let's see. But yeah, I'll be there.
Sure. Well, and with that, Mike is out.
Balash is out as well.